you're acting, you know, like the errand boy or the paid private security force for the government body, the city council members that just don't want me here. That's a form of tyranny. Regardless of whether you agree with my views or anybody else's views or the views of the person being removed, it's only if they are actually disrupting the meeting that they can be charged with what I was charged with, which was a 403 Penal Code section disrupting a lawful public assembly. And of course, I was not doing anything of the kind, and there's no probable cause. And this, here we get to the good news. The good news that I mentioned to you before is, even though when I went to the police station, they refused to give me the police report, and then I went to the district attorney's office, and they refused to let me look at the police report. And finally they told me, we'll tell you around arraignment time, which was 3 weeks later. I was arrested on March 12th, and the arraignment date was April 3rd. Then perhaps you can see it. Call back on the day before, and we'll let you know if you have to bother to come to court on this issue. It turns out I probably should have gone to court for reasons you'll understand in a moment. Finally, without being able to see this police report, without being able to see what I was charged with, or even who was charging me, I learned that indeed the charges were not going to be filed, though they could file them within a year, and this is a misdemeanor charge in which I face up to a year in jail and up to $1,000 fine, as I understand it. That's what the misdemeanors in standard circumstances are. So I again went down to the district attorney's office the day after I learned the charges weren't going to be filed to try to get the police report, and this is where the bad news comes in. They told me, oh, we can't give you the police report. You've got to go back to the police station to get it. So today, en route to San Francisco, I went to the police station to get the police report because I was told by an investigator, James Gray, who called me back and said, they'll be waiting for you at the police station. We've told them to have it ready for you and so forth. I went in there, and I was told, first of all, that it will be ready soon. It should have been ready when I arrived, but it wasn't. So when I filled out a form, I waited. I waited 5 minutes. I waited 10 minutes. I waited 15 minutes. I waited 20 minutes. Finally, I said, what's going on? They said, we have to find the right person to get you the report. And of course, this is not true at all. Anybody can pull the report out and pass it on to me. I have a right to it as the so-called suspect in what actually is a bogus and false arrest, not just by the individual who had me arrested as a citizen, which was probably Mayor Crone, but also the police officer who made the arrest. Why is it a false arrest when a police officer is obliged to make an arrest if a citizen has a complaint? Because this police officer saw all the facts involved, and he knew that there was no probable cause for the arrest. So he was essentially engaged in what you might call, and what we are perhaps calling, a conspiracy to violate civil rights under color of law. Or let's put it this way, he was sufficiently indifferent to my civil rights to take me to jail under these circumstances, even though he knew full well, because he took no action himself, if he'd seen probable cause to believe I was disrupting an assembly, he would have me removed from the assembly. He was just doing what the city council head, Crone, presumably, and again, I don't know because I can't get the police report, told him to do. And so I continued to wait, looking for the police report, hoping to get the police report. And I was told, we have 10 days to give you this police report now. You come back in 10 days. And I said, no, wait a minute. I requested this report back on March 13th, the day after this incident happened. And I didn't make a written request, but I made an oral request, and I was told that it would be released as soon as it was discharged from the DA's office. So then she said, okay, well, we'll give it to you now. So then I was told, we have to wait another 10 minutes. And I waited another 10 minutes, half an hour passed, 40 minutes passed. And I was told, well, we have to now remove things from the police report that shouldn't be shown to you. And I thought, what is going on here? I guess the point is that there's a lawsuit against Sergeant Baker, and they want to, who knows what they want to do? I have no idea what's going on. And so I finally tell the woman involved, I write a note saying, I can't wait here any longer because I'm going to miss my fine radio show. And I almost did. And as you can see, I'm not as well prepared as I might be, but hopefully we'll be able to kind of move over the rough spots here. And she said, wait another 5 minutes and we'll get it. And of course, I waited another 5 minutes. Finally, I had to leave with a note that said, you are expected to provide a police report according to the Public Records Act in a fair and timely fashion when it's requested. You're not doing this. And their claim was that they had to remove something from the police report. I said, what could you possibly want to remove? He said, well, the name and address of the person who made the report. Says, I know Christopher Crone's name. I know his address. I even know his phone number. So what's the problem? He said, well, we have to remove it. I said, fine, but that takes, you know, what, all of a minute and a half or less to strike that with a pen. No, there's something else going on here, and maybe it's some sort of personal animosity towards me. Maybe it's a desire to keep this report close at hand and away from public view. Who knows what it is? In any case, I still have no police report of it that I can really present to you to let you know the alleged facts, the so-called probable cause that justified police handcuffing me, taking me away from a public meeting, which is one of the highest First Amendment functions, the right to attend a public meeting, to assemble in a public meeting, and holding me for 5.5 hours in jail and releasing me at 2:30 in the morning.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. Steve.
He's there. Steve Weiss of the notorious Huff UCSC.
Yes, and Calberg, of course.
Indeed. So what's happening with the Huff UCSC? Have you been listening to our fine show?
Actually, we've been discussing our plans for this Saturday.
Now, this is the plan to occupy the Civic Auditorium and turn it into a homeless shelter?
Who told you?
Well, you know, I keep my ears to the ground. I know that one camp paradise is not enough. We need two or three. I know you're planning a large peace camp on campus because you got lots of green space up there, right?
We've got all kinds of stuff going on. Most importantly, this Saturday, we're doing the hunger cleanup. We're getting some 30 to 45 volunteers that are going to be going out to different projects in the community, like Food Not Bombs and the Homeless Garden Project and Grandma Sue's. So it's going to be a great opportunity for students to get involved with, you know, working on hunger and homelessness, as well as putting in some direct service and raising some money. And we actually, I want to invite anyone out there to please come along Saturday, meet at the Old Student Center at UCSC at 10:30 a.m.
Now, where is this again?
At the Old Student Center.
And is there, the Old Student Center is distinguished from the New Student Center?
Right, the new Student Center is by the bookstore, whereas the old is by the bike co-op.
And is the old one the one where you have been meeting regularly on the second floor of the student center, where you have your Huff meetings at 6:30? I guess it has been on Wednesday, but you've moved it to Thursday evening?
Yes, exactamente.
So you're at the same place you usually are, hoping forlornly for some Huff members.
Right.
And actually getting a few. And so this is a hunger and homelessness cleanup. Does that mean you kind of clean out the wallets of the unwary, or what?
No, it's actually just kind of cleaning up the ignorance, because a lot of people don't know about the hardships for homeless people, and this is a great way to, you know, get more involved and find out some stuff firsthand.
Huh. And if I know that you've been kind of doggedly trying to raise some of these issues. You've written letters to the City on a Hill, or certainly I've seen letters under your name there, and you've distributed leaflets on campus, and you've been a voice speaking out against the sleeping ban, both on campus and off campus. Now you have a strange on-campus law that's even worse than the off-campus law. How are you doing? I understand you were. Are you distributing new and exciting literature for students? Can they get in touch with you and get that, or is that actually happening? Or?
Well, they can definitely get in touch with me. Anybody can reach me at 427-0270. But with regard to getting leaflets out, that's something that's been sporadic, but we've done a lot of tabling, and there's definitely a presence on campus. It's just a question of how many students we can get involved, how many students will, you know, be willing to participate in our projects, and it's really going to take a lot more outreach, for sure, and we, you know, we're happy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're excited to do that.
You're going to be coming to the Right to Sleep Summit, I guess we're calling it.
Right, that's May 3rd and 4th?
Mm-hmm.
Right, for sure.
Yeah, you know, so this thing is all happening on April 6th, Saturday morning, 10:30, in front of the Student Center?
Right. We're going to give them breakfast. We're going to... hopefully you'll be there, actually. I hope you didn't want to sleep on Saturday morning.
Certainly not. I never sleep. I'm sleepless. Sleepless in Santa Cruz. That's Uncle Robert here.
Well, you know, Noah's Bagels is being very generous, as is Ralph's, Ralph's has helped us in the past with some... Hunger and Homelessness Project.
Little product placement here, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
But I say boo to Subway, because they, like, turned us down.
Uh-oh. Subway the bad boys.
Yeah, go to Togo's, folks. Go to Togo's.
Togo's, yes. Subway, no, according to him.
Or make your own sandwich.
Yeah, apparently they told you they didn't want to help after you told them you were helping homeless people.
Right. They were happy to help out until we mentioned that it was for a hunger and homelessness cause, at which point they said that too many homeless people hang around. And, well, we're just happy that the people at Subway have beds to sleep in.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, well, you get that attitude sometimes with even our own Santa Cruz City Council, even though they don't kind of put it that way.
Okay. Well, Mayor Clone will certainly follow in the footsteps of...
Did you say Mayor Clone, Benjamin?
What's happening? Yeah, he's definitely on Fitzmaurice's speaking end. Fitzmaurice does the thinking.
Right. Actually, Councilmember Fitzmaurice is the man who sits to the left as you look at the City Council of Mayor Crone. To his, actually, he's to the, I guess to the left, his right, but to the left as we look at him. And on the other side is Ed Porter. And then, of course, then there's the Shadow Mayor, Scott Kennedy, who seems to be the major tactician as to how to shut off the cameras and avoid embarrassing the City Council when they're... autocratic tactics are essentially challenged, as happened both with me when I was arrested, and also with James Ney, who was serving this lawsuit back on March 26th, and the mayor threatened to arrest, well, ordered him to leave, and he said, no, not going to go. And Kennedy said, let it go, don't do that, and we'll move right along. The week before, he'd said, call a recess, and of course, during the recess, I was arrested and removed. But hey, I just love to talk about that, I guess.
Yeah, you know, we love talking to you too, and you know, hopefully you will continue with the show.
Hey, at least for another 45 minutes, I can assure you that.
We will be listening, and we will be continuing our meeting.
Oh, well, let's let's get some of those flyers out. I did email some stuff to you if you wanted it. I don't know if you got it, but send it to you this afternoon or actually this morning for.
Thank you. One more announcement also, Earth Day, April 21st, we have a table there, and you're very welcome to be there, as is anyone involved in the cause, and we hope that a lot of people are going to be coming out for Earth Day, April 21st. It's your chance to maybe, you know, shed some light on the positive things that are going on in spite of all the bad things that are happening with the war and everything.
Hmm. Yeah, and of course, if people want to call you, your number is 427-0270, is that right?
That's it, for sure.
And your meetings are Thursday, 6:30 at the Student Center on the second floor, where you provide special chocolate croissant, right?
And they even call me Steve.
And just call you Steve.
Sure.
All right, and then of course, we'll be seeing you, I guess, on Saturday at 10:30 in the morning, when we're all going to be... I don't know, out there dissing hunger and homelessness, and maybe even sleeping out on campus. You never can tell.
Por supuesto que sí.
En español, eso es. Gracias, señor.
Gracias.
Bye-bye. Yes, we get all kinds of bilingual stuff here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can consider us the cultural oasis of beautiful Santa Cruz. And, hey... come and drink at the Oasis, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. So I'm still without a police report. I did get a copy of my letter after waiting 45 minutes to pick up a police report of an incident that happened March 12th. I must leave, and I left that with Miss Hopkins. And who knows, maybe tomorrow they'll have a police report for me. Wouldn't that be nice? Or somewhere down the road. But in any case, they are going to be hauled into court in October. I guess that's the first settlement conference, but we have to get our ducks in order and our papers ready very shortly, because they will have to respond to our charge. And our charges are that they are violating the basic federal law, which is the Constitution, the First Amendment of the Constitution. And this actually was put out in a press release way back on March 26th, Actually, that's not that far away, but it wasn't carried by any news media. So I will read it again here for those who missed it, though I think probably the point has been well made here on Free Radio. Santa Cruz, California, threats but no arrests as activists drop federal lawsuit in council's lap. Robert Norris again stopped from speaking. Minutes sanitized. March 27th by Becky Johnson, Huff press release. Santa Cruz, California. At another eventful session of the Santa Cruz City Council oral communications period, Mayor Christopher Krohn ordered yet another one of the speakers at oral communications from the council chambers, but not for a Nazi salute. In fact, two other speakers gave the council a Nazi salute from the podium without consequences. Homeless advocate James Ney used his oral communications period to serve each member of the City Council of Santa Cruz for civil rights violations by the council on March 12th and on other occasions as well. Mr. Mayor Christopher Krohn, you are hereby served in federal court, Ney thundered as he slapped down the notice of the lawsuit filed in federal court earlier in the day. Councilmember Keith Sugar repeatedly interrupted, point of order, to no avail, as Ney proceeded to name each council member and serve them individually and in person as the law requires. Immediately after leaving the podium, Krohn twice ordered Ney from the chambers. Ney stayed put. Sugar finally explained his point of order interruption by stating that oral communications is a time for the public to comment, not for you to serve legal process statements. Huff activist Becky Johnson, a frequent critic of the city's sleeping ban, was limited to 1.5 minutes of speaking time. The usual limit is 3 minutes. And we have this caller.
Hi, caller. You're on free radio.
Hey. Watch it when you're saying no media covered that. We've got that exact report already posted to our newswire, buddy.
Cool, man. Who are you, bud?
Santa Cruz Independent Media Center.
Oh, well, excellent. The Independent Media Center is moving forward. I have to be very careful. I sometimes misspeak myself.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It was posted, let's see. I forwarded it from Becky Johnson Wednesday, March 27th. We've had it up there on the newswire ever since then.
And indeed, Free Radio Santa Cruz is another outlet that has put that information out. At least it's gone out on my show, and I suspect it's probably gone out on some other shows. And if people want to get in touch with Santa Cruz Indie Media, they can, of course, go online and go to santacruzindiemedia.org. And you can not only see the infamous Heil Krohn salute, you can also see the thunderous James Ney delivering his documents to City Council.
Yep, and if you guys hurry right now, that actual report, the one you were just reading, that's at the bottom of the newswire. It's as soon as we get one more post, then that one will roll off, although it'll still be there in the archive. You just have to go to a little extra effort to find it.
Well, it could be a rare thing, so hustle down to the santacruz.indiemedia.org right now, all you computer people.
Yep, all right.
Thank
gotta
you.
Go.
All righty.
So you actually don't have to hear me on the radio. You can actually read it yourself in half the time. But I'm going to continue anyway for those of you who are computer challenged. Former member of the city's homeless issue task force, Thomas Levitt, held up a copy of the Bill of Rights and said it was radical dissent that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were designed to protect. He asked the council which was more obscene as he gave the mayor a Sieg Heil salute. This, the Sieg Heil salute, or Boxer Billy freezing to death in a carport in Beach Flats. He was not arrested or ordered from the chambers. Neither, I might add, was he answered by the city council. Local attorney Kate Wells addressed the council about her experience as a member of Soquel Board of Education, where she at times has been personally called a Nazi or a communist. Not once in 14 years did I curtail a member of the public from speaking. It is because I realize the higher good of the public exchange of ideas. Berkeley co-counsel on the lawsuit, David Beauvais, arrived fresh from federal court in San Jose, where he had filed for the council's violation of the First and Fourth Amendment rights under the Fitzmaurice decorum rules, which bar, quote, impertinent, indecorous, slanderous, or contemptuous comments. Filing is my free speech, observed Beauvais dryly. Robert Norris, the complainant in the suit, spoke to a gathering outside of council chambers before the meeting. He said the whole point of this is to restore a democratic process at city council. Earlier in the day, at an afternoon session on a motion from Councilmember Scott Kennedy, the council voted to amend the minutes of the March 12th City Council meeting to excise any mention of Norris's arrest. And I had the phone off the hook there, but it's back on the hook in case you want to call in, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And, that's a kind of another little detail. The decorum rules, I mean, that's really quite something. Something that I saw, if you look at there are sort of decorum rules at City Council, which are quite something. They are essentially, those phrases can be used to shut you off if you are indecorous, impertinent, slanderous, or contemptuous. And obviously, that's highly subjective, and there's no standard for that kind of stuff. And it means simply that the council thinks that it has the right to overrule the First Amendment. And, of course, it does not in any way have that right. And it has to be reminded of that by a federal lawsuit every now and then, or by people simply asserting that right. And when that Mayor Crone says leave, as James Nay said, you just turn and say no, and you sit down and you continue with the council meeting. And if they want to make a disruption and act like Nazis, how's that sound? Then they will. And then if they do, that A, reveals to the community quite more clearly how far they're willing to go, or else it shows them, in the words of old Mao Zedong, to be something of a paper tiger. In either case, you win, although you may have to put in a little time and energy on the issue as you go. I've been able to find here the so-called decorum rules for city council offices, which is something different than that which I was arrested for at the actual city council meeting on March 12th. But it's still an interesting and part of a kind of a general mindset. These rules, which I'm going to read to you, were put in place by then-mayor, now council member, Fitzmaurice. This is the man who initiated the action against me on March 12th and has repeatedly had me removed from city council for essentially disagreeing with him in a fashion he doesn't like. It's not a fashion that in any way has ever caused the meeting to stop. He has, in all occasions, stopped his own meetings because he has decided that I have been inappropriate in my behavior. And so he has decided he will disrupt the meeting in order to impose his notion of how I have to behave in order to qualify for entrance to his club in City Council. But as we know, City Council is not a private Fitzmaurice club, or shouldn't be. In fact, it is really the public that owns that area. It is the public that Fitzmaurice was elected to serve, and it is the public and the Constitution that really governs in terms of the rules of the City Council. Even though Fitzmaurice is the custodian or trustee as one of the council members, he isn't the person who writes the rules. Unfortunately, in this case, he did write the rules because he wrote, again, it's hard to tell for sure. We have to find this out through discovery and will in the court process. During the winter of 1999 and 2000, actually no, 2000, 2001, there were a number of us who wanted to see less deaths in the homeless community by immediately establishing immediate emergency shelter and suspending the sleeping and camping bans, or at least the sleeping sections of the camping ban, over the winter months. And we couldn't get the city council to put this on the agenda, so we did what we called the City Council Coffee Clatch, and that was we invited homeless people to come, serve coffee earlier in the morning right outside the council offices, and then during the business hours, we and certain homeless people, usually one, two, or three of us total, sat in the council visitors' chairs waiting to talk to council members about this issue, as we had a right to do. These offices were open for business. Well, Mayor Crone got real, Mayor Fitzmaurice at the time, he got really sick of this. And he started threatening us and telling us that he would have us arrested if we didn't leave and that we were harassing his staff and so forth. And, of course, he never made good on any of these threats as far as arresting us, because that would be a false arrest. And apparently Mayor Fitzmaurice doesn't mind having Crone get false arrest charges against him, but Fitzmaurice is a little more wary about that kind of stuff, so it's okay to stick poor Chris Crone out there in front. And if Chris Crone is naive enough and foolish enough to go for that, well, so be it. Anyway, what Mayor Fitzmaurice did instead was he had Anna Brooks, his secretary, get a lawsuit filed against us for harassing her. This was later shown to be without substance 5.5 months later in a court trial. But for 5.5 months, we had our rights restricted to be in the offices of the City Council and the other public offices around the City Council chambers. In fact, we were barred from a radius, I think it was 50 yards of the City Council, maybe it was 100 yards, I'm not quite sure, that slips my mind at the moment, but it was quite a significant distance, like a block, and the only time we could go is if we were attending meetings or going there on specific public business. So, for example, we couldn't go and talk to homeless people who often hang out in the City Council areas. We couldn't sort of engage in informal discussions there without the risk that we'd be arrested for violating this bogus injunction, which was finally dissolved when it reached trial. Now, Fitzmaurice set up the current, he tightened the current decorum rules at City Council, which I may be able to read later in the show, or if not at a later show. It's, and they're actually a part of our lawsuit. They're a part of our the decorum rules are part of the lawsuit. But what I noticed today when I went to the police station was, were the Fitzmaurice decorum rules for offices. And I call them the Fitzmaurice rules not because I am certain that he wrote them, but they certainly sound like his style. And I suspect they were initiated by him because he was the one who was pushing the whole decorum issue when he became mayor in 2000 and was mayor throughout 2001. What these decorum rules read, they read as follows, and they're posted in the police station, for instance. To maintain the dignity and civility of this office, visitors are requested to conduct their business with respect for those who work here and for visitors to this office. For the benefit of the general public and in recognition of the rights of our employees to a safe and productive workplace, we cannot condone behavior that is threatening, intimidating, or harassing in the office of the mayor, city council, and city manager. This area is for the reception of people with appointments, for response to questions, and for referral to other city services. Visitors shall advise the receptionist as to the purpose of their visit. This reception area is a working office and not suitable for public meetings or loitering. This area is small and inappropriate for gatherings. No behavior will be tolerated that disrupts the environment for the people who work here and for those who come to make appointments and do city business. Visitors shall conduct and conclude their business in a reasonable period of time. Examples of inappropriate behavior include loitering or holding meetings in this small space, aggressive or prolonged argument or conversation, loud, coarse, or disruptive conversation or other interference with city business, intimidating or harassing conduct, unwelcome interference with visitors or employees, tape recording conversations or actions without permission, posting signs or distributing leaflets, or any behavior that shows disrespect for the public or for our employees. Anyone who disrupts this office will be asked to leave and perhaps be subject to other legal sanctions. We will enforce these standards according to applicable law. The intent of this notice is to inform all visitors to this office that the rights of our employees and visitors are important to us. Their ability to perform their work and conduct their business efficiently directly affects the access that members of the public have to their government. No infringement of this access will be tolerated. The rights of our employees and of the visitors to this office will be honored. Signed, Tim Fitzmaurice, Mayor, Richard C. Wilson, City Manager. Actually, I think this has been changed somewhat and modified in the version I saw of it at the police station today. But what's interesting is, as you look through this itemization of different forms of behavior that are considered to be unacceptable, there are some things that are obviously unconstitutional that they are barring. For example, they're saying tape recording conversations or actions without permission. You can always record what goes on in a public space, provided you are doing so openly. In fact, you don't even have to do so openly, I believe, as long as there is no expectation of privacy. And in city council offices, when you're there on business, public business, and it's open to the public, there's no expectation of privacy. So this is just patently false. Loitering or holding meetings. Well, if you're holding meetings in such a way as to block the area and the space, obviously that's one thing. But loitering is, of course, what they tried to do to homeless people in the 80s and what they've tried to do to political protesters to get rid of them, and what they want to do to get rid of people who are in city council offices they don't want there. You can actually loiter in public areas all you want, provided you're not obstructing the business of the area. Aggressive or prolonged argument or conversation, that's clearly a First Amendment violation, unless you're doing so in such a fashion as to disturb the peace, which is another matter and is illegal under state law. Intimidating or harassing conduct. This is, again, an attempt to get through a sort of a posted statement what they fail to get through court action. They want to intimidate you. Because if they claim your behavior is intimidating, then they can deny you access to the public areas, supposedly, that you have the right to do. That's what they're claiming. Posting signs or distributing leaflets. You clearly can distribute a leaflet wherever you want. That's a First Amendment right. In terms of, certainly in public spaces. So this is, again, false. And again, an attempt to intimidate the public. And any behavior that shows disrespect for the public or our employees. No, you can show disrespect, provided it doesn't rise to the level of disturbing the peace. I mean, particularly for government officials. You have a perfect right to show disrespect. You might have a sign that says, fuck Mayor Fitzmaurice, and you're sitting in the office there. You have a right to have that sign. You know, or if you don't like the staff, if the staff is treating you in a fashion that's abusive and you have a sign that recounts that, you can't be expelled for that, provided you're not interfering with her or his ability to conduct business. So this whole thing is an attempt to intimidate the unwary. And at the police station, interestingly enough, it kind of had that impact because there was a person with me today who was sort of discouraged from videotaping the conversations I was having with the police because she felt that, you know, she might be told to leave. She might be told, you know, this is under these Fitzmaurice decorum guidelines. She might be told that, you know, she was subject to arrest. She might have her camera confiscated. This is intimidating the media. And for all of you, many media sources out there who are listening, frankly, I think it is intolerable. The media needs to know that when it goes into these spaces, it's not going to be arrested unless it engages in behavior that really disrupts the business of that area. And even then, you know, if there's a real newsworthy event going on, the reality is that there's a First Amendment right that may supersede that business, depending on whether, you know, the event is so newsworthy that the public needs to know about it. At least that's certainly an argument that could be made. But this kind of standard repression, which we've been experiencing under Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and now under Crone, as a matter of course, is kind of a fearsome thing. And it's fearsome to me because it's something that I would have expected under Rotkin and Matthews and Kennedy, because they've actually, you know, made it clear that, for example, they want to evict people from council meetings who use council members' names at the mic. That's what Rotkin was saying. They want to be able to control the time so tightly that if, for example, Kennedy launches into a 10-minute speech denouncing me, I don't have the right to reply at all at the mic. But to see Fitzmaurice, Crone and Sugar, and Porter and Riley going along with this and actually amplifying it under because of Fitzmaurice's very peculiar sort of prissy attitude towards creating a kind of a silent, head-bowed classroom space where we're all very, very quiet while the city council meets. Instead of meeting in a natural environment where if you don't like what the city council does, you say so. If you don't like what happens, you express yourself. The community is encouraged to express itself, provided that does not significantly disrupt the meeting and the progress of what's going on in terms of the agenda process. So that's a little bit of what's been happening with me recently. A couple of other bad pieces of news, or perhaps good if you like this sort of thing. You may remember Yuppie Planter and the gargoylish green fence that has gone up to set off the private territory of Matisse Selman and Ali Kav, Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now, almost never filled that I've seen, but now essentially to exclude young people who were there before and hippies and homeless people who were hanging out there and setting up this new fishbowl kind of scene where you get to, if you're one of the chosen few or the people who have money, to buy and eat at these places, you can sit down there now. That fenced area has now been joined. There's another fenced area that's been set up. Of course, there are plenty of them all along the mall, but the newer fenced areas include the silver fence in front of Taqueria Vallarta at the corner of Pacific and Cathcart, a kind of a wooden fenced area, planter area, that is now being set up in front of the coffee shop in front of Logos Bookstore. And I believe there's a fenced area that's being set up in front next to Kelly's Bakery that's fenced, of course, but then the area next to it is being fenced. So the merchants are making good on their threat to occupy the entire area and remove the public spaces. And I think, you know, people said to me, why are you picking on poor Matisse Selman and poor Ali Ka, you know, two small merchants who run these two green kiosks in front of New Leaf Market? And of course my answer was because specifically in this one particular case they were targeting young people at the community planter in front of New Leaf, and it wasn't even just a matter of providing seating space. They admitted that that's what they wanted to do, is get rid of young people there, get rid of the scene there. And to me, that's intolerable social engineering, particularly without a real public process and without trying other kinds of solutions. So that's why I have expressed myself so strongly on the issue of the yuppification or the gentrification in that area. And I encourage people to continue to say that they're, you know, to boycott these merchants and express their concerns, although apparently the Downtown Association is paying no attention to us, and so obviously we may need to take a broader approach, such has been suggested by some peace activists, that we simply occupy the street, take over the entire Pacific Garden Mall again, and, you know, maybe turn it into an area that really has some public spaces, as should have, and as was the case prior to the earthquake and prior to the Police Department Redevelopment Agency, Marty Wormhout redevelopment of the area, which essentially removed a lot of the public spaces, promising, oh, we'll have more benches than ever before, but if you look up and down the mall, you'll find at least half the benches have been taken out. And that process seems to be continuing. So, got some stuff that I can pass on and read to you. I've been kind of looking over some interesting articles. Today's Mercury News has an interesting column by Joe Rodriguez, who Bob LaMonica drew to my attention as an activist concerned with rent control in San Jose. Here he talks about kind of the yuppification of downtown San Jose, and I think it's an interesting story. Downtown San Jose has made a hash of breakfast, writes Joe Rodriguez in the April 4th edition of the Mercury News, Section B, Northern California edition. I was feeling extra hungry the other morning, so I invited my friend Jose to breakfast in downtown San Jose. But even though I offered to treat, Jose didn't seem too keen on the idea. I never go downtown because I don't have a reason to, Jose said. Number one, there's no place to park, and then there is no breakfast. Wait a minute, I said. After the city's redevelopment agency spent 25 years and about $1 billion to rebuild downtown, there should be a lot of places where a guy can get a regular breakfast, you know, bacon and eggs or pancakes served on real plates, or a diner, a sit-down restaurant where you can read the paper, caress a cup of coffee, and leave without a credit check. Jose gave me one of those who are you kidding looks. They don't build things downtown for average people. Where to go? To be honest about it, I had already suspected as much from a visit the day before to Grant's jewelry store on First Street. Grant's existed long before San Jose became the so-called capital of Silicon Valley. Patsy Grant was behind the counter. Where can I get a regular breakfast? People come in asking that all the time, she told me. I don't know what to tell them. All the regular places are gone. I called Scott Neese, executive director of the San Jose Downtown Association. He said many downtown folks grab a quick coffee and pastry at a number of caffeine houses. Whatever is closest to your office is kind of where you end up, Neese said. Getting one of those hockey pucks, that's what I call them, those little muffins. Anyway, Jose and I ended up at the Fountain Restaurant inside the Fairmont Hotel, the city's poster building for elitist redevelopment. We sat at a tiny table and looked over the menu. Sheesh, Rice Krispies for $5, Jose said. For $2 more, you get a banana. That's $7 for a bowl of cereal. Okay, I said, why don't you order the buffet? It's $17.50, but I'm paying. I know it's free, Jose said, but I still have a conscience. We looked at some other breakfast items. Half a grapefruit, $6. A dish called oatmeal brulee, $12. I didn't want to be unfair to the redevelopment breakfast, so I ordered the less expensive spinach and scrambled eggs for $10.50. Jose ordered the corned beef hash and poached eggs for $12. We had coffee, $3.50, and orange juice, $4.50. San Jose used to be a regular breakfast kind of town. When Jose was a student at San Jose State, his favorite was a place called Nani's. It was a hole in the wall, but it was a great hole in the wall, he said. I came to San Jose much later, but not too late to have enjoyed bacon and eggs or chorizo con huevos at a lovable joint called Keegan's inside the old brick Alcantara building. Nani's gave way to a parking lot, which became a luxury apartment complex subsidized by the redevelopment agency. I'm told that Keegan's closed when the building was sold. It's now a high-tech media company owned by the corporate parent of the Mercury News. I don't want to put all the blame on redevelopment. Higher rents downtown, gentrification, and changing lifestyles also are putting regular breakfast joints out of business. We interrupt this article briefly for the public.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, it's Uncle Dennis.
Hey, Uncle Dennis.
I'm going to be about 15 minutes late, so you might want to put on some music and let it roll.
How about just continuing with my show?
How about some music?
Okay, well, what kind of music would you like?
Whatever you like, Robert. Just something from the studio, so.
Okie doke, we'll do that.
Thank you.
And there you have it. We'll be having our next programmer will be a little bit late, so we will be having some music. Apparently there's an objection to my continuing my show, but, it's his time, and we'll give it to him. Finishing this story here is Joe Rodriguez and the column from the Mercury News. I don't want to put all the blame on redevelopment. Higher rents downtown, gentrification, and changing lifestyles also are putting regular breakfast joints out of business. But if the point of redevelopment is to revive downtown, why should luxury hotels, upscale condos, and pricey breakfasts be the focus? It should be the other way around. I don't want an elitist downtown. I want a mixed downtown full of everyday people, homegrown businesses, bohemian artists, and students, poor people and yuppies too. Build it, and the regular breakfast joints will come. Let the tourists go to San Francisco. I don't care. The collapse of a $1 billion mega-development deal last week gives us a rare time out to rethink our downtown strategy. Finally, the check for our redevelopment breakfast at the Fairmont Hotel, $39.51. The buffet would have been cheaper. And that's Joe Rodriguez's story, Downtown San Jose Has Made a Hash of Breakfast. And, you know, I mean, that is really kind of directly applicable to Santa Cruz. In fact, at the police station, there are a number of photographs of old Santa Cruz, like really old Santa Cruz, back in the 50s and the 40s. And Becky Johnson, who was helping to serve papers on Sergeant Butchie Baker and actually got the runaround from the police department as she tried to do that, and was delayed half an hour as she tried to do it, noticed this at the time, that if you look at an old photo of downtown Santa Cruz, you see all kinds of small businesses and cafes and restaurants and things that people can use, you know, 5 and 10 stores. Not anymore.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Robert Ed.
Hey, Ed.
I want to make a complaint.
Go ahead.
I think that's seriously fucked up that dude's going to be like 15 minutes late. I think he should just allow you to stay on the fucking air instead of some goddamn fucking Muzak. Thanks.
Sure.
Well, I've expressed my view on that too, but programmers do have the right in this studio to, and we extend the courtesy of trying to, you know, help them have in their time space what they want on the air, and if they prefer music, then that's what they're going to get, because that's how we do things here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. We have another call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, I just want to point out to your listeners, especially the last caller, that if you were running late to your show and or you were gone from your show, then that programmer would end their show and start your program at your scheduled time. So while in this case it seems like you lose out, you know, because Dennis is being late, you make out when you're in the similar situation.
I'm not sure I completely understand that, but if others do, that's good.
There have been times we've put on loop tapes for you, Robert, when you weren't there.
Sure, and I would be happy to do the same if there were a loop tape, but it seemed to the caller and to me that to do that with simply to put on music is a way of saying, you know, your show is worth so little that we don't want to have another 15 minutes of it. I mean, that is...
Or it could be that we have 4 hours of Robert Norris.
Well, that's what I mean.
How many hours do you want for... on Sunday, 3, right?
No, I'm on Sunday for 3.5 hours.
3.5. So we get 5.5 hours?
That's not the issue.
Okay, 5.5 hours out of, in a week. And I listen to a lot of radio, so I generally actually hear you for 5.5 hours.
Right, so you would prefer to hear some music. That's fine. And I'm going to be doing that.
Right. But you also have to admit that, you know what I mean, when you're not there and you provide a loop tape, you still get on the radio. So it all works out in the wash, eh? Have a beautiful night.
Okie doke.
I'm not going to go into any further discussion of that at this time, because I only have 12 minutes left before you're going to hear some fine music here on the air. What do we got here? Well, you know, there's a good story in today's paper. There's good news and there's bad news sort of on the national front, and that's not really the kind of stuff I usually go into in great detail, but... And it's probably been, you probably noticed it in the national news media, and perhaps other programmers have talked about it. Judge bans closing of detainee hearings. This was a good decision by a federal judge, Nancy Edmonds. Justice Department policy to close immigration hearings deemed of special interest to the investigation into the September 11th terrorist attacks is unconstitutional. a federal judge in Detroit ruled Wednesday. The strongly worded ruling in a consolidated lawsuit, essentially what it does is it says that closed hearings are not necessary to protect national security and the integrity of the investigation. The subtext is all about the government's right to suspend other personal liberties in the pursuit of national security. It's important for the public, particularly individuals who feel they're being targeted by the government, to know that even during the sensitive times, the government is adhering to immigration procedures and respecting individual rights. Unfortunately, the government is appealing this decision, but it is, I think, a small beacon of hope. Someone was trying to call in, and let's see if we can get him.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Doing good.
Good. I was just going to say, you know, it's I listen on the internet, and you need more airtime rather than less.
Oh, it's so sweet of you to say that. Thank you. But I do get a good chunk of it, you know, in the sense that I get 3.5 hours on Sunday from 10 to 1:30, and I invite people to tune in, and I also, of course, get this 2 hours, which is a sort of a prime slot, from 6 to 8 on Thursdays. I get cranky when people prefer to, they're not even going to be here if they prefer music. I get a little bit, you know, and apparently some listeners do too, though there is some dispute. Some people would prefer to hear a break from my dulcet tones. So.
Well, I mean, that just goes without saying, but the fact is that you got all this stuff to say, and you've been doing it for so long that, you know, we all got to put up with it and enjoy it rather than complain about it.
Well, hey, you're hired, man. Come on in.
Well, I'm about 1,000 miles north of you right now, so unless you can find a car for me.
Well, listen, give me a report.
Your Blue Beans is helping me find a car right now. He's giving up bicycles pretty soon. He's going to start selling cars.
What city are you in?
I'm in Olympia.
Wow, are you planning to come down for the homeless summit?
Probably not, no.
If you can get to Portland, Oregon, Dignity Village is sending down a bus. So
okay.
So you might be able to hook up with them, and also, I believe, Tent City 3. Are you familiar with Tent City 3?
No, I thought they got rid of all the homeless people. That's what I was saying in the newspaper.
They are, of course, these small encampments are, you know, the exception rather than the rule, but they are legalized encampments, or I should say, de facto legalized encampments, and both in Seattle, Tent City 3, and in Portland, Dignity Village. While there is a harassment of homeless people, you know, generally in the big cities, some homeless people have banded together and are, you know, standing up to say, look, we're, you know, rather than picking us off alone, let's all get together and try to help each other in a community, and that actually tends to inspire community admiration.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
So, yeah,
well,
I mean,
we'll keep up the good work. I got to get going. I don't want to steal your gas.
Maybe you can do the next 15 minutes.
What's that?
No, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you called in, and please try to come down or, you know, call again.
Yeah, and just, you know, sign up for even more shows. You know, the more people tell you to shut up, the more you should talk, and maybe they'll realize if they stop telling you to shut up, maybe you'll talk less.
Hey, thank you for calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, don't usually get this kind of support. Thank you very much for those calls, and I encourage you also to support our other programmers that are coming on. They do a lot of hard work in the studio, including the two callers who, you know, would prefer to hear music from 8 to 8:15. They do a lot of hard work with the studio, and I have a lot of respect for their work too. I also, you know, I prefer to get as much time as I can, and naturally that comes up from time to time, and there you have it. I'm looking at the Street Sheet, which is a sort of a smaller homeless newspaper, but we're going to have a lot of these out on the Santa Cruz streets this month, because the Coalition on Homelessness, which publishes it, gave us a number of them to pass on to homeless people to sell, and it's a buck, and it's got a lot of interesting news from the Coalition, and it also has an interesting story from Santa Cruz that you can also find in the Santa Cruz Comic News, in the Green Press section. What you can't find in the Green Press section is any mention of HUF meetings. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is kind of strange because the Green Press section has a thing called the Peace and Justice Calendar put out by a man named Paul Franklin, who is a Green Party activist, worked with Food Not Bombs, hardworking webmaster. But he's taken, shall we say, a disliking to HUF, and he's decided that HUF is not really something he wants to put on his Peace and Justice Calendar. And that includes, his Peace and Justice Calendar has plenty of other organizations, Earth First, city council meetings, it has Free Speech Radio, Democracy Now, it has Capitola Council meetings, It has Progressive Federation, but it doesn't have Huff. And frankly, this bothers me even more than, you know, anything you may have heard on the air today, because I don't like it when censorship rears its ugly head in these circumstances. I think that if an organization is concerned with peace and justice, as Huff is, it should be on this calendar, which appears every week, and I've encouraged Paul to do that. He doesn't really give me any clear explanation of why he won't. But if you want to get in touch with Paul and express your views on the subject, he can be reached by email at paul@peacejusticenews.org. If you think that Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom is suitable for inclusion on the Santa Cruz County Peace and Justice calendar, you might want to do that. Again, that's paul@peacejusticenews.org. And again, I'm not suggesting a flow of vitriol or anger or hostility toward Paul. I think Paul was put off by the fact that I was encouraging very strict accountability for Mayor Fitzmaurice, who's a Green Party member, and was rather upset with the Green Party when it failed to hold Fitzmaurice accountable for his anti-homeless behavior, which violates the Green Party platform here in Santa Cruz, and indeed in the state of California. Although he's an elected official and was actually mayor at the time, we couldn't get the Green Party members to go to the mic and officially tell him, you know, either get with the Green Party platform or take a hike. Any kind of resolutions of censure, nothing of that kind. When we attempted to put the matter into a committee, we got attacks on activists, like myself, instead of attacks on Fitzmaurice. Holding Fitzmaurice accountable to the Green Party standard. And I think that probably that's one of the reasons that I'm not on this peace and justice calendar. But I think it's important that the community know what's going on, knows events that are going on, and also there not be this kind of censorship, particularly, as you might say, on the left, insofar as this is the left. So I'm encouraging that to come to an end. I'm going to kind of start scanning the studio in search of music. In fact, I think what I will put on is 15 for from the Cream to the Dregs, which is the next show that comes on. A three-hour show, runs from 8 to 11, with Uncle Dennis, who also has Earth First News every day at 5:30. And I do recommend you listen to that. It's really interesting and educational news. And Dennis does some good platter spinning from 8 to 11, or from 8:15 in this case to 11. I encourage you to listen to that. I also encourage you might want to consider going tomorrow to the Rio Theater is having a 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock the presentation by Danny Glover, who he's an actor and also a public supporter of a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal, who's talking about social justice and peace issues. It's a $10 minimum, so it may be out of the range of some of us. I don't know how much they will sneak people in or not, but he's speaking on two different scheduled times, 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock tomorrow night. I kind of would like to see him talk about racial profiling in Santa Cruz, because we can't seem to get Chief Belcher to do anything around that issue. That's our police chief. It's a pretty serious affair. Glover is a famous fellow, and he's a hard man to reach on short notice, and I haven't been able to reach him. In fact, I've been, as I said, running up to San Francisco and tangling with the police department trying to get police reports, and so I haven't been able to do that. But you can still check out Glover. You can ask him questions from the audience if you can get in. Again, that's the Rio Theater at Soquel and Seabright Avenues, 5 and 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Also, I remind you, on Saturday at 10:30, there's the Homelessness and Hunger Cleanup. I'll be speaking up there, so I believe will Linda LeMaster. I've heard that she's the former head of the Homeless Issues Task Force. She'll be up there talking about civil rights for homeless people and concerns of the homeless. I'm not quite sure what her topic is going to be. And then on Sunday, I will be returning with another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides from 10 o'clock in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. That's for anyone who wants to listen in. I will have a little bit of music in there, but you may have to get your music fixed at other times, because I do tend to go on. I like to talk, and as the caller points out, and it's true, I've got a lot to say, at least I think I do, and I think others agree with me. Stuff that needs to be said, and I don't have enough time to say it. And I'm sure there are other broadcasters who also feel the same way, and I hope that we can find some way. We really need a second radio station, of course. That would be nice. I've been talking about that for years. Hey, that's just about the end of this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I do want to thank you all for tuning in. I want to thank people for calling from far away to say we want to hear more of you. That's really encouraging to hear. And I also appreciate hearing dissenting views. I think it's important that, you know, people feel free to express themselves on the station, even when, you know, it may not be something I want to hear. It's important that it be said. So thank you for being with me on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Tune in again on Sunday at 10 o'clock. And if you got questions between times, you can either buy The Street Spirit from a homeless newspaper. It's got a lot of good information in it. Or you can call Huff, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I'll try to answer your questions and hook you up and also get you involved, because we need help at Huff, and we meet 8:30 on Wednesday mornings at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street downtown in the morning. So join us there.
Here's what's with my efforts.
Lately, I've been working in a factory, in an industry. Yeah, lately, I've been working in a factory.
Wage slave, that's me!
Yeah. Lately, I've been working in a factory, in an industry. Yeah, lately, I've been working, filling barrels, 10,003. Yeah, how much wine is enough to sell to Americans? How many products are enough to sell to Americans? How much profit is enough for one rich man to make up my labor? That he knows damn well comes at the expense of me having time for my children. Lately, I've been working in his factory, in his winery. Yeah, lately, I've been working, filling barrels, 10,003. Yeah, lately, I've been working in his factory, so I can feed my babies. Yeah, lately, I've been working in his factory. Wage slave, that's me, yeah. How much wine is enough to sell to Americans? How many products are enough to sell to Americans? How much profit is enough for one rich man to make up my labor? That they know damn well comes at the expense of me having time for my children. Family values means burn down the factory. Family values mean burn down the factory. Family values mean burn down the factory. Family values mean burn down the factory. Burn down the factory.